Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Living Mythology, I'm proud to bring you mages, sages, and seers with Kamwast of Kemet. Today is not his first time on the show, but this is officially the first day of his show. So I welcome Kamwast. Greetings, my friend. How are you?
Uncle Jot Fenev, life, health, and prosperity. I'm great. How are you, Hercules?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm looking forward to being taken to the beginning of all things and being shown the foundations of the universe today. That's very bold of you, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I thought, what's better than to start the show from the beginning of the beginning, don't you think?
That sounds great to me.
And the first thing I want to do is take us to the rivers of chaos, the rivers of Nun, called by the Egyptians. I want us to understand. So we say, Pa Renua, in this case, Ptah, Pauki, Pautet. I am Ptah, the primeval matter of primeval matter. I am the beginning and end of all things. I am the beginning of the creation. This is a deity, Ptah, who is usually seen wearing a lapis lazuli cap and in the mummy form holding a great staff called the Wa staff, which is a mixture of many different staffs, and it's very long. And he's in a golden robe. And he created himself out of the energy and the elements that were just floating around in what was before the universe. And all of a sudden, they fused together to create this amazing being. And it is he, they say, that created the Ankh, the life force, by which everything else was to come into being. He was the opener of the ways, the beginning of all beginnings. And he wasn't alone. This amazing, amazing being saw that in other parts of the universe, he wanted friends. He wanted help. So from this beginning of nothingness and energies came a woman, an energy, a goddess, and her name is Nuit, or Nut sometimes. The fabric of the universe and time itself is created by Nuit. They say that there were threads, primeval threads that were tied together all of a sudden, as if by magic, woven, and it became this being, this beautiful goddess who wears a red crown and a beautiful carnelian collar. The cornelian, the stone, is the stone of decision-making. So she created time and the time to think about things. How do you like that, Hercules?
That is awesome.
She decided when she spoke with Ptah that beings, all beings, needed time to be able to develop and create and become whatever they were going to become what thou art, she said. You have an ancient witch whose name was Circe, and using a spell called the Elixir, she said to turn people into pigs, become what thou art. Well, on the other side, Nice knew it, decided that people needed, or all things needed development. And so she said that too, but in a more positive vein, become what thou art, become what you will be. And there you go. So these are two beings that came out of nowhere. The energy form was there. We don't know where it came from because the Egyptians were very vague about it on purpose.
Uh-huh.
But then all of a sudden, they were there. Then there's another being that came, which was also important, and his name is Tehute. Thoth, you have him called Hermes Trismegistus in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
He's also Hermes, the winged messenger. And he's also in Rome, Mercury. And, of course, we know he's just finishing just now, which is wonderful for me because I'm a Virgo. Mercury has just gone out of retrograde. Yay! Which means the planet Mercury not interfering anymore. And I'm a seventh planet Virgo, so I hated that whole thing. It's kind of like getting psychic flu. But anyway, to go back to Tehute, these other beings had, according to the Egyptians, had more human-looking features. But Ptah thought that was kind of annoying. And he has many different forms. Sometimes he's seen as an ibis, because they're very mysterious birds. They just show up out of nowhere. Sometimes, like Ptah, he's seen as a baboon. Egyptians thought the baboons were incredibly intelligent. And if you see how they react in the wild, yes, they are. So the two Egyptian gods that are major creation gods are two baboons.
And I heard that a lot of Egypt, the baboons were captured and trained, and
yes.
they were house servants that used to perform
baboons.
Tasks.
If you came home from a hard day at work, a baboon would mix you a cocktail. Or they would be doing the dishes or answering, I guess by then it was, you know, answering your messengers. But they actually swept up, according to early accounts, they swept the house. They would put things in order, roll up the mats. They actually did set the table for dinner. The female baboons were there taking care of the children. Is this sounds like Planet of the Apes a little bit?
Yes, I was just thinking that.
I had a feeling, well, we're on the same wavelength, Hercules. I understand your energy. So we have all these things going on with these amazing beings, these two baboons and these two other beings who are in human form. But this is, after all, what the Egyptians said. And the whole thing is, these beings that are in human form are not flesh-colored. All the gods and goddesses of Egypt, in the Teru, as they're called, are gold. They do not have skin tones. They are in golden form. It's said that their bodies shined like gold, and they looked like the color of gold, which is why many of the statues and many of the mummy cases and even things on the walls are usually colored in gold. Gold to Egyptians is the energy form of beginning of life.
In Greek lore, there were the golden giants who were around on our planet and very populous during the age of Kronos, or Father
and
Time.
It's very light.
They used to guide humanity, and they were known as the guides of human souls. So even after humans died, the golden giants would be there to guide them. It's very interesting that the Egyptians had golden beings also who fulfilled a spiritual function.
From the beginning of time, from the primeval matter of primeval matter. Now, all this energy is going on all over the universe. And, of course, the Egyptians, having to be here on Terra, Earth, they created everything to Earth forms. Their gods and goddesses were not looking like what we would call greys or aliens, per se. And here you have, floating in the middle of all this massive mix-up of liquids and particles and energy and loose everything that the gods, the Teru, are creating, suddenly there's a sun. There are stars. The goddess knew it. Now, they say that she is from Geb and Shu, but there's a more ancient form of Nuit, who is the sky goddess herself. She is the sky. And I always see a beautiful woman with long, dark hair and wearing a huge cape of dark cobalt, lapis lazuli blue. And she's running across the universe. And as she does, you see light on all of her beautiful parts of her cape. And they are the stars and planets. So this is an amazing, gorgeous image. You have Geb, and Geb is the Earth Father. In Egypt, unlike Greece, you have Demeter, who's the Mother Earth. You have Father Earth. We do everything backwards. We knead dough with our hands and stomp grapes, you know, crush grapes with our hands and dough with our feet. We're just very backwards people. But it all works well. I just hope it tasted okay. Meanwhile, I don't know if I would want to eat bread that somebody's been stomping on. I'm not sure about that. In any case, from the middle of this river of chaos, from which landed, we know that probably true on the planet Earth, for instance. I want to get down here because that's where we are, right? You have a water planet before anything else. And they called that the River of Chaos, the Waters of Chaos. And from the Waters of Chaos, suddenly mud came up. And from the mud emerged a beautiful blue lotus blossom. And from the lotus blossom, which had opened, out came the Lord Ra, the sun god. There are two major sun gods. And there's always debates about these things. You have Amun and you have Ra. According to my research, Ra was first. And, of course, later you have, in your time, in your Greek time, you have Amun Ra and Serapis.
Yes.
Alexander was Ra. Ra, and you have Zeus Amun. By the time the Ptolemaic and the Alexandrian people came, you have who Alexander was supposed to be the son of, which was Zeus Amun. But in the meantime, I'm going to Ra. Ra, they say, is the grandfather of all the other deities that came into being. But we've got one more. If you go to Egypt, this is an interesting thing, and you look down in the desert, you'll see a funny little beetle running around, usually with a ball of dung. What kind of dung, I don't want to know. But anyway, from the dung, the beetle fertilizes its eggs, and out of nowhere, thousands of scarabs appear. The beetle is a scarab, and the Egyptians thought that that was another way of creation, that the beetles created themselves out of magic, out of nothing. And so there is a god, his name is Khepra, and Khepra is a beetle that created himself and gives people life force, gives the energy of birth. The ability for us to reproduce is done by Khepra. He says that you can create life between man and woman, and suddenly you will have children between a ram and a female goat, what have you. You will have the ability to create life. And that body is also created by another deity. His name is Numen. He is a great ram-headed god, and he makes, before you're born, before you're conceived, in the mind of the high gods, on a potter's wheel, a celestial potter's wheel, this Numen will put together what he's going to think you're going to become, male or female or what have you. He will make your mold, and that energy will go into your mother, and you'll be created out of this magical energy. So you have a soul breathed into you by Khepra, the ability to be life force. And the ability to come into physical form is created by Numen. So these are the beings I wanted to talk about in the first place, because these are the beings that created themselves out of the mysterious rivers of none and the worlds of chaos to create the rest of the universe. Do you have something in this way in Greece, Hercules?
Oh, of course. But today is your show, not the Hellenic show. So we're going to learn about Egypt and our knowledge. But yes, we have creation stories, not one, but several. And chaos is usually there at the beginning. And there's a goddess dancing in the chaos and giving birth to a serpent. That's one version, the Pelasgian creation myth. And there are, as I said, others. And we, too, have forces that were in the beginning. The Greek forces were primordials in the beginning. They were beyond abstraction. And then each new generation of gods or each new level of divinity becomes more and more human until we get to us, and we're a curious mixture of divinity and humanity.
Well, on that note, this is the thing that I was going to bring up next, which is the idea, according to all of humanity and all of the divine forces that we know of, that we are the high form that the deities created onto this planet in stewardship of the planet, in guardianship of the planet. So Ra said to the two baboons, to Ptah and Tehute, I want to make an experiment. You see that funny little blue thing over there, which is Earth. I want to put something on there that we can watch and see how we can learn about this universe that we've just created. So Fatah and Tehute Thoth said, okay, what will we do? So there is a goddess, and her name is Nebtet. She is the sister, Nephthys, the sister of the goddess Isis. And Nephthys wears on her head a huge vessel. And what's in that vessel is the essence of what is life. And so Tehute walked to Nephthys and says, my dear goddess, may I borrow a little bit of that energy that you have there in that vessel? And of course, being very gentle and sweet, she said, of course, here. And she poured some of it out into a jug. And so Tehute and Ptah came down to the water planet. And they threw the liquid, the mixture, the magical mixture, into the water. And so you have cells and protozoids and little tiny creatures. And they lived for a time, and they learned something about this ocean that they created. And they came back, and they told the two deities, this is what we've learned. And Nis said, what can we do now? They have to have time. So she gave them lifespans. They were only little, so she only gave them little lifespans. And then they returned back into the bowl and explained their experiences. And Ra thought, well, this is okay, but we need more. And so they threw the liquid, which has now gotten larger, back onto the earth. And suddenly there are rocks and stones coming up out of the water. So now they have another place for life to work. So Tehute and Ptah and the plants felt the warmth of the stars, the sun, and they felt the rain that was suddenly there from the waters. And they were able to tell them about those things, but they couldn't move. So this was not good. So Ra wanted something else. So again, the bowl of life was filled. And they said, what can we do with this? So there were fish, and there were land animals, and there were air animals, birds. And they all came with more varied experiences. And this delighted the gods, because here we have all these things going on, but they wanted someone to kind of be a keeper, a monitor of this. And so they created humans. And the humans did things. They learned about things more quickly. And Nis gave them a longer lifespan than the other beings. And it took a longer time for them to develop from child to adult. And then they seem to be, decaying. And so they brought the energy that they would come back into the world recharged. And this is what I believe, that the Egyptians actually believed very much in reincarnation, to regenerate. There's the other theory that they go into the summer lands, the divine eternal rest, and what have you. That was later on in Egyptian history. Earlier, they returned into the bowl of light and became part of that energy and taught the divine what was going on in the world, so that the divine learned and grew and were better able to monitor and work with the universe. And so as things changed, more complex beings came. The humans were out of control. And so we had to have beings created. So Ra thought about that. And because the beings did decay and die, they had to figure out what to do about that. In the meantime, there was a pharaoh, and his name was Osiris. And his wife's name was Aset. She is Isis. And they had a brother and a sister, Nebtet and Set. It's kind of like Abel and Cain, Adam and Eve, all rolled into one. All one. And I don't want to get too far into that right now. There's a whole history, a love story, a passion play, and what have you. But this show today, I want to keep more about the primeval matter. And that's why I wanted to talk about the bowl of life and the Ankh. To bring that energy into life, the first symbol in all of Egypt is Ankh, the circle with the line, vertical line and a horizontal line. We all know what an ankh looks like, and we must know that it is not a cross. To me, when I think of crosses, I think of great pain and suffering. Ankh is not a cross. Ankh is a magical key, a physio-magical key. It unlocks the energy of the universe and also positive energy to whomever looks upon it. When you say, when an ancient Egyptian greeting, which I do always to all, which is Ankh Ujat Seneb, it's life, health, and prosperity. When you're holding an Ankh in your hand, you are sending whomever you are with positive life force. You're changing the negative energy around them and on themselves into something positive. You should be glowing with positive energy. So that is the primeval symbol, the primeval energy, also the beginning. Ankh is the beginning, the first word, the first symbol that all of Egypt has ever used. I know in Greece you have a key. It is it's almost looks like a labyrinth key, and that's also home in Egypt. That's the symbol for house. And it's funny that they look so similar. The only difference is in Egypt, that symbol, the house symbol, also has a little triangle on the upper right top, which is actually the Egyptians hung out on their because it was so hot. They often would sleep or have dinner or just have other life things going on up on the roof. It was cooler. So the wind would blow and they were there. And I want to go into that energy too. So you have earth, air, water, and fire. And those energies were brought about by the four deities I'm mentioning. You have Ptah, who created the ability to reason and the ability to create an ingenuity. And then you have intellectualism created by Thoth, Kehute. He is the one, he's supposed to be, I guess you would call him the Socrates of the Egyptians because, well, he was the greatest teacher. It was he that created knowledge and the ability to reason and to think and to differentiate good from evil. And not everybody took his work to heart. Did we not? We have, even to this day, we have very good people and good animals and very bad people and bad animals and bad energies. We have herbs that will cure and herbs that will kill. And
yes,
it's all the way through, because according to the ancient studies and ancient traditions, there were some of the bowl of life got tainted as it returned from the earth to the universe. Somehow or other along the way, something went awry. It didn't stay perfect. And that's a problem. So that was, even then, I guess they needed to have a little more quality control, huh? And they didn't. So it came back, and so we had things that were negative besides positive and wonderful. And they told Ra, look, and this is going to sound silly, life is not always a bowl of cherries. Sometimes it's a bowl of crab apples, too. You have negative energy that comes there. And Ra was afraid of that, didn't like what that was going on there. And they needed beings that would monitor those things to make sure that that didn't always happen. And unfortunately, a couple of those droplets happened out of the middle of nowhere. And there is a being, the crocodile, and his name is Subek. And he's not very, yes, you call him Typhon by the Greeks.
Yes.
And he's a typhoon. And he is the deceiver. He's not the devil of the Christian or Judeo-Christian traditions. No, he's downright nasty. He's like, you know, too bad. You know the old fable by Aesop about the scorpion and the puppy dog, or the scorpion and the fish. This is exactly the same thing. You have a crocodile, and, you know, here, come. I'll take you to the other side of the river. And, of course, by the time you get there, the crocodile eats you. And this is what the point is. You need to watch what you're doing. You need to watch, really know who you're dealing with. He is the monitor of reality. He makes people see the ugly side, that it's not all beautiful. There are disgusting bad things that happen, like war and sickness, disarguments, you know, various political parties. He sees all these negative things happening, and he wants you to see it. He's not going to say it's going to go away. And that's the thing. He shows you right from wrong, but it's up to the individual to choose. And this happened from the beginning of time. We must know that you can either put your hand in the water or your hand in the fire and learn. And the crocodile teaches us these things. And crocodile is a very, very ancient soul, an ancient being, and also was something that happened out of the middle of nowhere, out of the rivers of chaos, out of the river, as it does in the Nile, out of the river crept the crocodile.
And it must be pointed out that although these tales are very old, they're immortal tales, and they're manifesting now in video games and in role-playing games and on television, most recently with Moon Knight. And we did a show dedicated to Moon Knight very recently.
I know you're also very dedicated and very much in awe of Atlantis. And
yes, of
there
course.
Are theories, too, that the Egyptian deities, although I believe that they are starry-like beings that did come from beyond to Earth, from beyond the Sirius, so it was the Sirius system, the planet Sirius. I do believe that's true, but I do believe that they did enter various parts of the Earth, and possibly Atlantis was one of them where it landed, besides Egypt. We have evidence that they may have also come to Peru and to Mexico. If you go to Peru, if you go up to the top of the highest of the pyramids, you're going to see in one of the insides of the pyramids, you're going to see all of the kinds of humans there are in the world, carved in this,
yes,
like an altar. And it's very funny because according to the Spanish, the Peruvians didn't know all these people, but apparently they did. And they spoke of a system of star gods and goddesses. And the Egyptians, too, there is Shaset. She is the goddess of Shasta, like the old soda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
She wears a seven-pointed star on her head, and she is Tehute's wife, according to humanity. And she is numbers, and he is letters and reason, and she is arithmetic. She's mathematics. She taught people what counts, literally, that they'll have to count. So she made them do this. And she's another one. Out of the stars, she descended, and she came, and Tecute, in the form of a man, fell madly in love with her. And they became, I would call them school, because you have numbers, and you have letters, and you have Ptah, who's with them, who's also reason and, you know, intellect and working with these things in architecture. So they were learning how, when civilization came, how to build and how to make things work, and not just agriculture and farming. In the beginning of those periods, too, there you have Osiris. In the beginning, before other mythologies, Osiris started out, Osar, is as the green god. He was a vegetation god. So he was the one that taught the Egyptians how to cultivate and how to farm and how to use those vegetables and fruits and such to survive. And somewhere along the line, this story like Abel and Cain occurs. And I said, we'll get into that later. But Osiris and his wife Isis started out as a king and a queen, Egyptian pharaoh and his queen, and made things, created civilization and homemaking and I'll call it honor and rules, what's right and what's wrong in civilization. What do we need them now, don't we? Oh, my God.
Yes.
We do need that energy. We need the energy to connect to government, in celestial, spiritual energy, that people will see now what is right and wrong again. I'm finding, as a high priest, and I look out into the world, and I see so much sorrow and sickness, and people not acknowledging each other, or ignorance of each other, and intolerance of each other. We're entering, this is June, this is the month of gay LGBT pride, where people who are of many kinds of ideologies are recognizing and joining hands with each other. I find this extremely beautiful. And I wish that the rest of the world would take an example from Pride Month and would then be proud of each other and be one with each other. This is what we're saying and what the Niteru would like as well, that we all join together, one nation, one people on earth, living in peace. And that actually is a line from Elizabeth Taylor's Cleopatra, that she, Cleopatra, said was Alexander the Great's creed, Alexander the Great's raison d'etre, his reason to be, one nation, one people on earth living in peace. Of course, you know, he wanted to be the ruler of all that, did she. She, you know, she was at that time dallying with Julius Caesar, but make no mistake, Cleopatra wanted to be the ruler, not Julius Caesar. She didn't want him running things. She wanted to do that because, after all, she was a Greek and she knew better. A Ptolemaic Greek, nonetheless, but still a Greek.
Yes.
But meanwhile, the reason I mentioned her is she was the greatest high priestess of all times of Isis, Isis was the one that taught women homecraft and how to be a mother, and also, in an odd way, how to manage men, which Isis found inferior to women. She said men were more based on ego and lack of reason, that women had more reason than men at that time. She felt that they were, you know, causing, because they were listening to the crocodile, that they were starting wars and jealousy and foolishness. And that she felt that although her husband Osiris taught people civilization, that she needed more rules. And so from that energy, another primeval being evolved. And she is a daughter of Ra, and she is called Ma'at. And Ma'at is balance.
Yes.
And later on in the funerary rites, she's shown whether or not you'll go into the next life. That's not where she came from. She's a starry being originally, and she's a writer. That's why she's wearing an ostrich pluma, basically a pen in her crown. But she's writing down things. But in the beginning, she was what's right and what's wrong. She's equilibrium. She's balance. And that was important because in the primeval times, that wasn't there yet. The chaos needed balance. And so Ma'at, Lady Ma'at, came into being. All of a sudden, she just...
And in synchronicity, as before you spoke of Ma'at, I was posting a picture of Ma'at, and I clicked on it, and as soon as I clicked on it, you said her name. So,
well, as a psychic, I will say this. I receive and I send vibrations. So you are feeling what I was going to say, what I was thinking. And I think that I also picked up exactly on what you were doing at the same time, which shows a very strong silver bond between the two of us. And that's a very good thing. So I commend you, Hercules. I do. That's a very good energy.
And Ma'at is very important, the cosmic balance, because what we who serve the higher realms have to do is we have to help maintain the balance. And the balance needs to be served sometimes in one way and sometimes in another way. And right now the balance is threatened with all the polarization taking place and all the voices that people are trying to suppress. So the challenge is to have unique self-expression, find places to express itself and to regain the balance that we need as humanity to move forward instead of destroying ourselves and each other.
This is true, and this is very important because this being, this beautiful deity, says, here is your fair chance. You have this road before you, which is the right road, but we also have freedom of choice. And as I said, you can listen to the crocodile too, which is not the right thing to do, and you can go to the wrong side. The crocodile is not the devil. The crocodile is going to mislead you. Basically because he finds it fun. He thinks it's mischievous. And also because he wants to see if you'll do that. So in that way, he is kind of like Lucifer. He is a tempter, a deceiver. And also, in another way, a punisher. Although that's actually Ma'at's job. To not only keep you maintaining the balance, but if you do not maintain that balance, Ma'at says, you will receive the consequences. But they're not forever. Because as I say, I do believe the Egyptians believed in reincarnation. And so you'll serve that energy, clean it up, as it were, and then go forward. There is another, a later school where she will balance or measure the heart against the feather of truth. And if your heart is too heavy, see that old that song from Christmas, make your heart be light. So if your heart too heavy, they throw your heart to this creature called Amut, which is a disgusting combination of a lion, a hippopotamus, and a crocodile. There we go with that crocodile again. And it eats your heart, out literally, and you vanish into oblivion, into the abyss. So that energy, if you get it away from all the imagery, what they're really saying is they take your negative energy and dissolve it, and so that energy is then used some other way. You know, there's a lot of, in the ancient ways, a lot of metaphoric things too. It's not all literal, although the Egyptians certainly believed, and I do, that these beings are beings, that they're not just concepts, they're not just thought in somebody's head that this is an explanation for why this is happening or whatever. Maybe I'm too anthropomorphic. I don't know. But I do believe that those energy forms exist to this day and are still monitoring and hopefully helping to change things. I know in Greece, I'm going to go back to Greece, and also in Alexandria, Egypt, there is a movement among the Pharani, which are people like the Kemet that I am, that are trying to reinstate more visibly the Nitaru, the gods and goddesses of Egypt. And I know that that's happening in Athens, especially in Greece, where you have the return of the 12. And I know you're active in that yourself, Hercules, and I commend you for that, to awakening the ancient deities. And that's important. We have to have that God force.
No, it is. And they never went anywhere, and they're only sleeping inside of people. they've been there the entire time. They never went anywhere. And I, too, tend to think of them anthropomorphically, although in my mind I can conceive of them as impersonal forces and star beings and beings of light. In my experience, they're very anthropomorphic.
Well, you know, in mythology, in both Greek and Egyptian, We were assigned to them very human qualities. Later on, I'll talk about the rivalry and later the tragedy of Isis, Osiris, Nephthys, and Set. It's a whole passion play, and it's a mess. But let's go into that later on in another show.
Okay.
What I was going to mention, the River of Chaos, this primeval matter also is considered a living deity, and one that has no hieroglyph, symbol, no statue, no visible image to work with, and that is Temu. Temu is the universe. It is everything, and it is the primeval being, the beginning and end and all of everything of all that is there is. It is, I guess, in the Star Wars sense, the Force. And it is Temu that gave the energy to all these other beings. And Temu is a mysterious, mysterious energy, never seen by humans. The Egyptians had no real way to apprehend this force. They knew that Temu imbued with all the other beings this force energy, that they were then able to use this for whatever purposes they had to do, whatever their tasks were. And this is a concept that also, I believe, happened in Sumeria, and therefore the Jews took that on, and the Greeks as well. It's beyond the anthropomorphism. It's just the Temu is a force that is beyond all comprehension. There is no physical form. It's just this amazing, bright, shining, glittering energy that is the entire universe itself. And Temu, they say, has millions and millions of years and is shown as the Egyptian symbol, the Shen, which is a circle with a line under it, one of the symbols of Temu. Temu is, that's the only way I can describe that. There is no other, it's never shown as a man or a woman or a cookie. There is no form for Temu. And yet Temu can come into any form Temu chooses to. Just as Zeus, Deus, could be a swan or a shower of gold or a lion or any form that the great Zeus chose, so is that true of Temu. But Temu never is seen as a man holding a lightning bolt. Temu is never seen in human form, ever. So this is a different concept. You have the ultimate that has no form, humans understand. And I kind of dig that, to be honest with you. It means that the entire universe is responsible to Temu, that Temu is not a human. The Egyptians understand, and all other forms of races in this entire earth, including Islam, they wouldn't admit it, think of the deity in a human form, in a man or a woman's body. In Egypt, you know that there are many, many deities, Neteru. I want to use that word, and I want you to call them the Neteru, not deities, because they're beyond all that. Sometimes show the head of a cat or a snake or a bird or a ram or there is even one who is a hedgehog and also a frog. It's Hekwet. So you have all these different, but I've always said to everyone, and the Egyptians have in certain ways said this, that those heads are masks. That the animal, the being doesn't have. And if you look at all those statues, except for Bast, and the head will be a little larger than it should be, all of them are wearing wigs behind the head. Have you ever noticed that?
All of
those statues, they're not in human form. They have a wig behind the head. And it would be that if it's a mask and it's larger or smaller, the wig would hide all that. Now, we talked on another show about ancient astronauts, and I'm going to say this again. If these heads are some kind of a helmet or some kind of a life support system, that wig would hide the actual being's visage, their face. So that's kind of a clever thing, I think. And they say that the beings of Egypt, the Neteru, were able to go amongst humans in these forms without compromising their actual form. So that's the amazing thing.
Yeah,
Camus. Camus never used that. Camus doesn't use that. Camus doesn't have to. You just know that, and I can feel it right now in this room, that that energy form is with me and agreeing with me and saying, yes, Michael, yes, Comwes, this is what we want the world to know, that this energy is true and pure and still there. And like you said, the gods and the deities of Greece were kind of sleeping. I think they've all awakened, and so have the Vikings, the Norse gods and goddesses, and the Eskimo. Mm-hmm. And I think that they finally said, hey, you know, guys, we need to come back. We need to be more visible and physical. And that's what I'm finding with, for instance, there is a wonderful high priest. His name is Tamesu, and he works with the Lord Ta and also Isis and all the other forms. He is one of the most potent, powerful high priests I've ever met, experienced in my life. And he makes amazing paintings. And the energy of those paintings comes to life when you look at them. They're all over Facebook, and all his posters are everywhere. And he has a new book out, and it's a hymn, basically, to all the Nitaru. And it's a beautiful book. But his energy is pure. And I find that that's what's happening, that those of us who are blessed by the Nitaru, blessed by the deities, are rising. You being one of them, obviously, Hercules. You're such a conduit to the energies that it boggles my mind that we met, and it's never by accident. And all of a sudden, all these energies are rising, I hope, to help us lift the black veil. And I said 12 years ago to my temple group, there's a black veil over the earth, and we needed to lift it. And here we got all this war and chaos, forgive me, COVID-19, and starvation and homelessness and apathy. A lot of people talk about things, and they're not doing anything about it. And that's the other energy that has to happen. And later on, I'll go into that too, but you have Heru, Horus. And there are two different forms of Horus. Horus, who created himself from, again, the energy of the sun or the stars. And then you have Horus, who's the son of Isis and Osiris. They're probably the same being. And you know how mythology gets switched around.
Yes.
They made him their son, you know, like the goddess Nephthys. She was at one time a goddess on her own, and then she became the wife of Set. But she was the goddess of your shadow, the goddess of mystery, of unexplained things. And then she just became, you know, Set's wife, and she gave birth to Anubis. But there's more to it than that. The energies are always changing and shifting. But we need to get that. We need to focus that energy back. And what I'm trying to say is, right now, we have entered the age of Aquarius. And in case you haven't noticed, people, the age of Aquarius was born of the river of Nu, of chaos, of violence, of anger, of sickness, of ignorance, of prejudice. And we have to, like the gods, rise out of this river of Nu, the chaos again, so that we will have the other side of Aquarius, which is, according to the old song, wisdom and knowledge and harmony. And this is where we need to go forward now. And that's why I started my show with the river of chaos, the river of Nun, the land of the land and the water and the earth of uncertainty. So we, as these deities who created themselves, must now rise above this and come out like the lotus blossom and open and see the world how we want to create it ourselves. Just as these beings created themselves, we need to create the world better again, clean it up. We need to unvirus it. We need to feed people and clothe them and be what they all said, a nation of peoples, a planet of peoples who live in harmony. How do you feel about that, Hercules?
I wrote down with a picture of Maat, Winged Victory escorts me to the shrine of cosmic balance where divergent voices can be heard without disrupting our equilibrium. And we've lost the ability to listen. You don't have to accept or believe what folks are saying, but one should listen because each voice represents a perspective that is unique. And by listening to the perspective, you can see what the person sees and understand why they're saying what they're saying. We've fallen into a place of dark versus light, the eternal war. But there are places in space-time where the eternal war hasn't happened yet, or it's been long over, depending on how you want to look at it. And we can operate from there. We don't have to feed into the quarrel of our current universe.
And I want to say something. I never push on everybody. I never say that what I believe and what I do, that my way is the only way. The Egyptians had 500 different gods and goddesses.
Mm-hmm.
The Indians had many, many, many more. And I'm going to say this. There is no way that is the only way. You must find your path. You must find what's right for yourself. And we've had, I believe, as I said, in reincarnation, and we've had many, many lives to figure out what's going on with ourselves. So now it's time to focus on how, as beings, can we unite? No matter what you believe in each other. That's important. And we need to focus so that we will go forward in time and remove ourselves from chaos and start to live in a better way. On that note, I am teaching my way, my kemetic way. I will be training high priests, high priestesses, priests and priestesses, scribes, people that want to learn the kemetic way of doing things. And that means to accept all others also, that their realm of possibilities exists, that not to say this is right and this is wrong, but to say, okay, these concepts are written this way and they can be accepted and also added to other concepts so that we have harmony. And that's where I want to go. I want to take us out of this river of chaos back into harmony, back into balance.
And that's where I want to go too. So we're on this journey together. I too, I'm a universalist on some level, and then I'm very attuned to a particular mythos on another level. So my path happens to be Olympian. That's my choice, and it's where my greatest resonance lies. So that's the way I'm going. And like you, I don't push my way onto anybody else, nor insist that my way is the only way. The ancients had something called interpretatio, the Romans called it, and I'm probably mangling the pronunciation, but what they did was they made correspondences, and that's how the tables of correspondence were created, where they would take what they believed and relate it in an understandable way with what the people they were encountering believed. So if there was a muscle man, strong man god, well, of course, that was Hercules. If there was a wise god who gave us wisdom and knowledge, of course, that was Hermes. And this way they made equivalences to better understand the pantheons of other people. And they saw that even though the culture and the stories they were telling were different than their own, that one could recognize the divine operating through this other cultural way of expression. So I've been working very hard. We created, in addition to the Olympian way, a theurgic way, which is Greco-Egyptian, and yours is an Egyptian way, and there are other ways that are arising. So I, too, am starting to teach my way, which I don't think I've ever done totally. I've done bits and pieces here and there, but I'm not getting any younger. I'm in my 60s now, so time to pass it on.
Me, too. You know, I'll be 64 in September, and, you know, that old Beatles song, "Will You Still Love Me When I'm 64?" I hope so.
We're of an age. But, I'm 63 also.
All right, so we were born in the year of the dog, and we're baby boomers, you know, so there we go. So But that energy needs to be passed on, and it needs to be passed on correctly and in perfect, as my pagan side says, in perfect love and in perfect trust and with harm to none. And that's what I'm looking for. I'm tired of seeing people abuse or use religion to hurt each other. You know, you have, I won't get into it, but we have three religions that keep beating the hell out of each other, don't we? And they're all related. They all came out of Samaria, didn't they? They all came out of a little town in Samaria when a man heard the voice of, I will say, Tammu, and moved east with his people, his daughter and his children. And they moved east out of Samaria and went into a place called Canaan. And from there, well, all kinds of things happened. But what happened was later on, all that ancient energy was pushed aside, because then we heard the voice say, my way is the only way. And I won't, and, I won't.
And that will have to continue on another day, because we only have a couple of minutes, and I'd love for you to share how people can find you and how they can follow your way.
Very simple. On Facebook, Michael K. Waterman. You can get me at my email address, mkwaterman@icloud.com. My phone number is in my Facebook page. You can find me there. I'm also on Instagram, but best way to find me is on Facebook. Friend me on Facebook and let me talk to you, or email me on mkwaterman@icloud.com, or call me and we will set up an appointment to work together. I'm known as a psychic, and I have been a teacher of kinetic magic over 50 years. And it is my privilege and my pleasure to teach the ancient ways to those who will hear them.
And again, thank you for that and for many other things. You're off to a great start with your show. I'm looking forward to it growing and evolving as time moves forward. And I'm looking forward to involving you with more adventures. We have to plan now a special where you will share your views and experiences with the cinematic incarnations of Cleopatra. So that's next on the roster. We also have an ancient astronaut forum and a mythic monsters forum coming up in June. So I'll give you information on that as I schedule it as well.
Anybody who knows me knows there is no one that knows more about Cleopatra, except maybe Cleopatra, than I do.
So we'll benefit from that knowledge.
I studied Cleopatra since I was 8 years old, and thank you, Hercules.
My pleasure, and thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you called in and are patiently waiting in our queue and listening to the show, whether you clicked on and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody.
Blessed be. Good night.